Beloshna Kodesh Nemra or Becholosh Nemra, Sugin Megillah. When you learn Kriyas HaTorah, are you only Yotze if you learn in Hebrew? Or are you Yotze if you learn, even if the Sefer Torah is written in another language, are you Yotze in translation? So Tosis asks, what do you mean? Shait on a level of the Araisa, when you learn Kriyas HaTorah, are you only Yotze in Hebrew or other language? There is no Kriyas HaTorah in the Araisa. What the whole Kriyas HaTorah, the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu was Misaken, and Ezra was Misaken, but it's not a Dimin HaTorah. So Tosis says, no, you see from the Gemara that sometimes there is a din of Kriyas HaTorah. That's when is that? So we know that Tosis says Parshas Zoh. We know that this Parshas Hakel, even with that, you know Parshas Hakel. But that's only on the Sukkis of Matzoi Shemitah. After the Shemitah year comes to a close, so then you have to lane Kriyas HaTorah Deraisa in the Beis Hamikdash, Parshas Hakel. It's interesting, the Midrashim say that the purpose of Shemitah is that everybody should take a sabbatical from work and they should sit and learn a whole year. That's the purpose. So at the end of the Shemitah year, we have a big commencement exercise, so to speak, that everybody was learning, supposedly everybody was learning Kefi Yecholtam all year long during their sabbatical from their jobs. If you have an agricultural society, so all the farmers take off that year. And then Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, everyone is busy with the Moyadim, they can't really go to work anyway till after Sukkot. So then on Sukkot, on Chalamayit Sukkot, we have this public Kriyas HaTorah to conclude the whole year's learning. So the whole year they were learning, and then you have a public Talmud Torah Barabbi. Rashi has on last week's Seder, on Parshas B'chukosai, he says, by the Teichacha, by the Brachas of Klovis, so it says, in B'chukosai Teilechu, if you keep all the mitzvahs, then you get rewarded. If you do Averis, then you'll be punished. So Rashi says, in B'chukosai Teilechu, if you do the mitzvahs, you get tzchar. It doesn't mean if you do the mitzvahs. It means, in Tiyu Amelam B'Torah. If you work very hard, in Liman HaTorah, that's what it's referring to. Because the Pasuk says later about the mitzvah. So the Iker of the Bracha, the Iker of the Brachas of Klovis is on Horebin and learning. But then the Pasuk says that if you violate the Averis, then you'll be punished. So Rashi says also, it means if you won't Horeb and learning, if you don't work hard in learning Torah, if you're not really interested in learning, then one thing leads to another, and then you'll be punished for all the Averis. But the Pasuk seems to say explicitly that the punishment of the klola, the teicheche, and the exile going into Golos is because we didn't observe the Shnas HaShmita. It says the Feirish, keeps on repeating, all of the years of Shmita that you didn't keep. So what has it got to do with learning Torah? The Mefarshim asks on Chumash. Rashi says in the name of the Medrash that the Iker Bracha comes from working hard and learning. And the klola is because you don't work hard in learning. And it says the Feirish has nothing to do with learning, has to do with observing Shmita. So the Mefarsh Machumish explained that it means the same thing. That if you don't take off during Shemitah, that means that you're not learning. If you take off a sabbatical every 7 years and you dedicate the whole year to learning, so then you're Amele Matar. It's Hobe Hotali, it's exactly the same thing. So we know that there's one Kriyas HaTorah Deraisa, the Sukkis following the Shnas HaShemitah, the Sukkis at the beginning of the 8th year, that you have to have Kriyas HaTorah Deraisa. Then Taisis Tuzuf HaNais, not only once every 7 years, the Sukkis following the Shemitah year, that you have to have a public Kriyas HaTorah. Every year, once a year, every year, you have to have Parshas Zohar. And then some claim that Parshas Parah may also be Min HaTorah. The Vilna Gaon says that it doesn't make any sense. He thinks that it's a Torah Sefer. How can it be that Parshas Parah is the Raisa? There's no reason. And others explain why perhaps Parshas Parah should be the Raisa. So comes the Ramban HaChumash, and he says there's another Kriyas HaTorah once a year, every year, that's the Raisa. And the Magen Avraham quotes that there's a Yalkut Shimoni that supports the view of the Ramban, the Yalkut Shimoni on Chumash, that Kriyas Parshas Maimon HaSinai once a year, every year, is a mitzvah deraisa. It's a pasuk in Chumash Dvar that says, "Yishamu l'chosh menafshchum yot pen tishkachas advar masheroa inecha fen yisum mevavchum kol imecha yecha v'haydaitam levanecha v'levnei vanecha yoy masher malat alatnei Hashem alchecha v'chorei." It says you have to remember and tell your children and your grandchildren about the story of Maimon HaSinai. So just like Parsha Zohar, Shtei Zohar, Lois Ishkach, you have to remember. The Gemara derives from Sukkim and Maseches Megillah and Daf Yud Zayin that the way to remember is by laning the Tzibur once a year, every year from a Sefer Torah, Mitoch HaKsav. So the Yalkut Shimoni says the same as the Ramban. Apparently the Ramban wasn't aware of the Yalkut Shimoni because the Ramban HaChumash writes it on his own. But the Magen Avraham in Simen Samach and Hilchus Kriyashman by Abba Rabba, when he discusses what kavanas one is supposed to have when you recite the bracha of Abba Rabba, so he says you have to have kavanah for this and for that and for the other things. So he mentions there about Maimon HaSinai, to remember Maimon HaSinai. So he quotes this Yalkut Shimoni that supports the view of the Ramban, that once a year, every year, there's an obligation to read the story of Maimon HaSinai. These two great historical events of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Maimon HaSinai are the yisoid of all of our religion. At those two occasions of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Esamakas with the Yetzias from the beginning to the end, from the beginning of the Esamakas to the end of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, with the Maimon HaSinai, these two great events, which we have a historical tradition for, teach us all of our religion, all the Yisraelis Amunah. Our Amunah is not based on philosophy and Hakira, and we figure this out. You figure it out like this, and someone else can figure it out Fakir. You can make a Pirchi, you can shlug up your Svara, you can make a better Svara, you can make a different Svara. Our whole religion is based on historical documentation of the fact that God appeared to us and He spoke to us and He punished the Rishoyim and He gave reward to the Tzaddikim and He broke the laws of nature. So obviously He's the one who created the world, and that's why it says in the Aseres Adibros, the Mefarshim explain, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzi Sicho Mi'eretz Mitzrayim. It doesn't say Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Barasi Shamayim V'Oretz. I'm the God who created the world. So the Ibn Ezra comments on Chumash, and Rabbi Yehuda Levi, his father-in-law, comments in the Sefer HaKuzari. Rabbi Yehuda Levi is supposed to have been the father-in-law of the Ibn Ezra. They both write the same explanation, that our religion is not based on abstract things. Our religion is based on historical traditions. We had Shishim Riboy people between men, between the age of 20 and 60, aside from the women and aside from the children. We had over 2 million people witness all of the incidents of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Maimon HaSinai. And these incidents teach us, through history, all of the Yesedis and Emunah. That's why it's so important to have Sipi Yetzias Mitzrayim on Pesach, and to have at least once a year, every year, to speak about Maimon HaSinai, because these are the great two historical events that give us the whole historical tradition that our whole religion is based on. The Rabbi Yehuda Halevi interprets the Psukim and the Shir HaShirim. And Rabbi Yehuda Levi was before the Rambam, so the Rambam quotes that also in one of his letters, either the Geres Hashmad or the Geres Teman, I forgot one of them. He quotes the interpretation of the Kuzari on the Pasuk that the in Shir HaShirim, that the Umas Oil and the nations of the world have always been enticing the Jewish people and asking us, why don't we join their religion? They ask us, Shuvi Shuvi HaShulamis, Shuvi Shuvi V'Nechazabal. Shulamis is representative of the Jewish people. They say, what's so bad? Why can't we join their religion? So we always answer, Matechzu B'Shulamis K'mecholos HaMachanoim. If you will show us, and the Rambam quotes from Yehuda Halevi without mentioning by name, Matechzu B'Shulamis K'mecholos HaMachanoim, if you'll demonstrate to us, if your religion will be able to demonstrate, Machane Mul Machane, Machanoim means Machane Mul, or Machane Shechina Mul, Machane Yisrael, if you'll show such a Gilu Shechina like was showed to us at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim and at the time of Maimon HaSinai, then we'll be happy to join your religion. But there's no other religion in the world that has such a strong historical tradition of having so many people witness all the Nisim and the Flos and the Osus and Mofsim like the Jewish people had at the time of Maimon HaSinai and Yetzias Mitzrayim. By all the other nations, they claim that Yoshki did Nisim and the Flos in the presence of a small group of Chassidim, presence of his students, his handful of disciples. That's all. But the Jewish tradition has it that we had at least 2 million people seeing all of the Nisim and the Flores at Maimon HaSinai and at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that's why the Ramban says that this is a mitzvah min haTorah to lain what we lain on Shavuos, in other words. On Shavuos morning, we lain about from Parshas Yisro, about Maimon HaSinai. We should have in mind that that's a mitzvah min haTorah that we are fulfilling. It's interesting, the Briskerov points out the Pasha Pshat in the Parsha of Yisro. If you read the Chumash with Rashi, it reads as follows, that originally there was one plan as to how Maimon HaSinai was going to take place, and then upon the request of Bnei Yisrael, the plan was changed, and the whole Maimon HaSinai took on a different nature. That originally Moshe Rabbeinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, go notify Bnei Yisrael that in a few days I will appear to you and speak to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, Bavu Yishma Ha'om, Bedabri Yimach, and Bnei Yisrael should be watching at the time that I speak to you, so they should see that I'm giving you the Torah. And then the pasuk continues to say, Vayoshev Moshe Zdiri Ha'om El Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu gave back a message from Bnei Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch, and it doesn't say what the message is. So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, Ritzeinenu Liros Es Malkeinu. The message was that we would prefer that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should speak to us in person, rather than we should watch as outsiders. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, we would recommend, we would ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should speak to us. So then Rashi quotes from the Medrash, Im Kain, if that's what you want, that I should change my plan, then instead of speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu and have you listen in as outsiders, you want me to speak to you, Im Kain, then you have to go to Mikveh. If they would have just been outsiders watching the Maimon HaSinai, the way the Shekhinah speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, then Moshe Rabbeinu would be the one who would be yelling, who would be having the Dibur HaShekhinah to him, and Bnei Yisrael would be the watchers, like you watch on television what's happening somewhere. So we don't have to go to Mikveh, we're not participating actively in the Maimon HaSinai. But if it's Anenu Liris as Malkeinu, if the request was that the Shekhinah should speak to us directly, so then we will be actively participating in the Maimon HaSinai. So then we will have to be Tovel in the Mikveh. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, go tell Bnei Yisrael that they have to go to Mikveh and they have to be Tohar in order to be present at the time of Maimon HaSinai. So it's interesting, Rashi quotes in the Medrash that the idea of Tahara, of going to Mikveh for the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, was not for the fact that they're going to be learning Torah. If you're the outsider who's listening to where the Shekhinah is teaching Moshe Rabbeinu, and you're listening, so you're also learning Torah. The idea of the Tahara, of the Tefillah, as a hachana for Maimon HaSinai, was for the purpose of Dibur HaShekhinah. The Gemara in Brachas says not so. The Gemara in Brachas quotes that Ezra instituted the din, Ezra Sofer, the one who started the Yishuv in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Binyan Bayis Sheni. Ezra HaSofer instituted a takana. The Gemara says Ezra made 10 takanas. So one of the 10 takanas of Ezra was that a Balkari is obligated to go to Mikveh before he learns Torah. So the Gemara says, where did Ezra get this from? So he darshaned the pasuk. It says that all the people have to go to Mikveh before Kabbalah Satorah. So he darshaned the pasuk. You see, just like the Torah was given, Be'emo B'yiro, B'reses of Ziyah, the Torah was given in a state of seriousness, and they were trembling. Vayarham, Vayanu, Vayechaduham, they were tittering, they were trembling. They weren't just like when you watch a football, baseball game or something, so you nibble on hot dogs, on popcorn, on Cracker Jacks, whatever, you can eat, you can nosh away. Here they weren't noshing away. There was a serious business here, and everyone had to go to Mikveh in advance. So too, Ladoros, the Maimon HaSinai wasn't just a one-shot affair, a historical event. It was to teach us how the Torah should be transmitted from one generation to the other, how we are supposed to learn Torah. It was a parsha of history from which we should derive, from which we should learn how to learn Torah Ladoros. So just like at that time, at the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, they learned Torah Be'ema B'yira B'resa Sevizeya. They weren't joking around. So to Ladoros, we have to learn in a very serious fashion. So there is a dispute among the Rishonim whether this Takana Ezra, usually when you speak of a Takana, it means a Takana Midrabbanan. It's not a Dimin HaTorah. Usually a Takana means Takana Midrabbanan. Once in a long, long while, the Gemara says no. The Takana means Dorash V'Hiskin, that he darshaned the Pasik. Rabbi Echman Zakeh, the Gemara has a Menach, has darshaned the Pasik. And he came up with a real din derais, a real biblical din, and he was mefarsim that din. He made it public. He let everybody know this din. So that's also called a takana. Let's say the rabbi made a takana that you're not allowed to talk during Kriyas HaTorah. Remember, the rabbi made a takana. It's a din in the Shulchan Aruch. I mean, the rabbi enforced the din in the Shulchan Aruch. So sometimes the Gemara will say, Rabbi Yechman Zakeh gemachta takana, means that he sought with it that the people observe the real din as it always was. So here's a major dispute in the Mefarshim on the Gemara regarding this takana Ezra. The other nine, the Gemara says Ezra made 10 takanas. The other 9 takanas that Ezra instituted are clearly only midrabbanan. They're not biblical deen. The only question is this takana. This takana he learns that from a pasuk in Chumash, that everyone had to go to mikveh before they were able to learn. So too, throughout all the generations, you're required to go to mikveh before you want to learn Torah. So some are of the opinion that this too is only takana midrabbanan. It's not a din min haTorah. Because the tevila in the mikveh at the time of Maimon HaSinai was not so much because of learning, it was rather because the Shekhinah was going to speak to Bnei Yisrael, as Rashi and Chumash quotes, in the name of the Medrash, if they would have. I don't think the Gemara learns that tevila.
Later on,
that Hazor was another thing. The Gemara says that before Moshe Rabbeinu sprinkled the dam on their bodies, they had to be tovel in the mikveh in advance. Why didn't the Gemara derive it from this pasuk? It says explicitly that at the time of HaSinai they had to be tovel in the mikveh. So apparently the tefillah before Maimon HaSinai was not for the purpose of a geirah. So that's why either it's for the purpose of learning Torah, anyone who wants to learn Torah has to go to mikveh in advance, that the learning should be done in a serious fashion, or that the tefillah is to enable them to have the gilu shechina, in order to participate with the shechina in the dialogue. So the Rashi's presentation on Chumash based on the Medrash is on the assumption that Takana says is only a Takana de Rabbana. It's not at all a din min haTorah, and the tefillah that Bnei Yisrael had in anticipation of Kabbalah haTorah was in order to be able to deal with the Shechina, in order to receive the Gilu Shechina. And some Rishonim and the Gemara say that it's not so, that this Takana says with the other nine Takanas of Ezra are only de Rabbanan. But this one Takana of Ezra that everyone has to go to mikveh before they learn, this is not a Takana de Rabbanan. This is a real din min haTorah, as it appears in the Chumash, and apparently they don't understand the Psukim the way Rashi quotes in the Medrash. That it's only if they will be participating in the Shechina speaking to them, the Shechina will speak to them, then they have to be Tevil. But if they'll be listening when the Shechina speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, then they won't have to be Tevil. They don't learn like that. They learn that was the original plan from the very beginning, that everybody has to go to mikveh because of Kabbalah HaTorah, because not because of Gilu Shechina, but rather because you're learning Torah. Whenever you learn Torah, it has to be in a serious fashion. The Psukim and the Sefer Shir HaShirim depict the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael as one of a marriage, just like a relationship between a husband and a wife, so too is the relationship between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Exactly what does that mean? The Psukim describe in other places HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our father and we are his daughter, and sometimes we are described as his son, Bnei Bechori Yisrael, and Biti, and sometimes Achosi, Vayosi, my sister, various descriptions of Chiva and Ahava, indicating different aspects of relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Yisrael. But the Iker stress in Shir HaShirim and other Pesukei HaTanach is on the relationship between a husband and a wife. What exactly is the Kavana here? So Rav Soloveitchik once pointed out, when we studied Sanhedrin, we learned this. The Gemara has in the first parak of Sanhedrin two dinim that seem to be contradictory. On the one hand, there is a din that if witnesses give testimony, they rattle on for an hour and a half, and they say a lot of things. And then part of the testimony has to be rejected for some reason or another. So the Gemara has a principle that's called Eidusha Batla Mitzasa Batla Kula. If part of the testimony has to be rejected, then you're not allowed to accept any of the testimony. You have to reject the entire testimony. And the Gemara Sanhedrin, the first parak, has another din, which seems to be just the opposite from this din. The Gemara has a cloud that's called Palginan Dibura. We split the words of the witnesses. A witness comes and he testifies that I robbed the bank together with this fellow. We both robbed the bank together, and therefore we both have to pay kefil. So the din is that ain't on the mesa matzmer rashi, you don't believe him. Or let's say he says I did avodah zarah together with the other person, whatever. He says I did chil shabbos together with the other fellow. So the person does not believe that himself. Ain't on the mesa matzmer rashi, we can't believe what the person says about himself. But what he said about the other fellow, we do accept. In other words, half of his testimony we reject, and the other part of the testimony we do accept. So the Rishonim all ask, what happened to the principle of Eidus Shabbat Mitzasa Batla Kula? It's just the contradiction of this klal. So two different opinions are presented by the Rishonim. Most of the Rishonim give one answer, and the Ravid goes in a completely different direction. It's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. The Ravid's opinion is not accepted, but it's quoted and is discussed. So the Shach and Chashim Mishpat discusses it at length. So the Ravid's answer to this contradiction is as follows, that when a person testifies about himself, he's not considered an aid at all. When I testify what someone else did, then I'm called an aid. Sometimes he can accept my testimony, sometimes he can't. But when I testify about something that I said, Ein Oda Meisim Atzmei Rasha doesn't only mean that you can't believe what I say, it means that I don't have a shame aid at all. It doesn't get off the ground. So the only time you apply the principle of Eidu Shebatlu Mitzos Batlu Kula is if he said so much testimony, and all of it is testimony, some of it has to be rejected. But when he says so much testimony, part of it is about what he did, it's not that you cross it out. You never even accepted it in the first place. It doesn't have a shame Eidus at all. So now the Gemara, according to the Ravid's interpretation, the Gemara draws the following distinction. What if the man says, my brother or my sister or my parents did an Aveira with someone else and they're all Chayiv Misim? So should I say that since on the parents he's not believed because he's a relative? So you have to cross out that part of his testimony. So therefore you cross out the rest of the testimony, so no one gets punished or not. So the Rebbe says, yeah, that's the din. Since you have to cross out the testimony regarding the relatives, so you can't accept any of the testimony based on the principle of Eidu, Shabbat Mitzas, Shabbat Kula. But the Rebbe explains in the Gemara, if the man testifies about his own wife, you can't have the wife testifying about the husband because a woman is not accepted, a woman cannot testify in court. But let's say if the husband testifies about his wife, that his wife did rob the bank together with someone else, or his wife did some kind of an aveira, but his zorach, or shavuz, whatever, there was somebody else. So then the Ravid says, ishto kigufo, and it's not just a melitza, ishto kigufo, he says, ishto kigufo means that the husband is not considered an aid at all, just like when a man testifies about himself. It's not that the aidus that he testifies is pasul, it's not considered aidus at all. So too, when a man testifies about his own wife, I say, ishto kigufo, he doesn't have a shame aid at all. He's considered a baldover. When the baldover is made, it doesn't have a shame edus at all, and it will not be possible. The testimony will not be possible against the other person. So the Rebbe says a chiddush niflo, that ishta kigufa doesn't only mean that it's a relationship, that it's a kurva. It's even more than a kurva. Ishta is considered like the baldover himself, literally kigufa. So Rav Soloveitchik claimed that this, in his opinion, was the reason why the psukim in Tanakh always stress the Bnei Yisrael relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as one as Biti, one as Bini, one of Achosi, one of all different types of relationships, Rayosi. But the main description is like a husband and a wife. Why? Because the relationship between a husband and a wife is considered one of a baldover, that they're considered closer than stama relative, is considered like baldover. And the psukim and Tanakh mean to imply that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so close with Bnei Yisrael, like a husband and a wife, that's considered Kodshe Berichu v'Yisrael Achad. Achad means more than Stam HaKor. It's considered Chal, that it's a Baldova Mamish. Like a marriage, right? So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that the Midrashim seem to understand that just like when a man gets married you have Erisin and you have Nisuin, so too the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael started off with an Erisin, and then it led up to an Isuin. So what exactly constituted the Erisin? So the way to make Erisin, the common practice is that you mikadosh ayidei keser. You give over a ring. It doesn't have to necessarily be a ring. It can be anything that shavi keser. So the Midrashim say that the luchas that Moshe Rabbeinu delivered to Bnei Yisrael was the keser kiddush. Rashi and Chumash quotes in the Medrash. The luchas that Moshe Rabbeinu delivered to Bnei Yisrael was the keser kiddush, and that accomplished the Erisin. And when was the Nisuin accomplished? So the definition of Nisuin is when the Chasam Kala had Yichud in the Yichud room, according to the Rambam's opinion, or according to the Psak of the Ramo, the Ashkenazim father, the Psak of the Ramo, you don't have to go to the Yichud room. The fact that they're standing under the canopy, that itself is the Nisuin. They're standing in a separate room. That's called Knisa L'Rishus HaBaal. An Arusa, the difference between an Arusa, see, in modern Hebrew, Arusa means a girl who's engaged. But in biblical Hebrew, Arusa means an Eish HaSish, a woman who is married to her husband, but she's not a Nesua yet. They only have the first stage of marriage, they don't have the second stage. What do you mean the first stage, the second stage? What's the difference in Halacha? So in Halachic terms, the difference is that an Arusa is an Eish HaSish, Shelo Beveis HaBaal. And the Nesua is an Eish HaSish, Beveis HaBaal. That's what the Gemara says, that the term Beso Zuishto, sometimes you have in Chumash, V'chipa Bado Be'ad Beso. By the Kanvala Yom Kippur, the basis of Ishto can only refer to Ishto Nesua. It doesn't refer to Ishto Arusa, because the Arusa is an Eish HaSish who's not the Beis HaBaal. So when was the Nisuin accomplished between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Israel? It had to have been after the Erisin, after the Luchas were given. You can't say, some say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kof Aleim Har Kigigis, he picked up the Har Sinai, that was the Chuppah. How can you have the Chuppah before the, that's a Shaila, the Mishnah Melech has a Shaila. If you make the chuppah before the harayat, before the kiddushin, is it good or not? We always had the chuppah before, but we continue to stand under the chuppah after you say harayat. So when he gives the ring, that's the erisin. And then the fact that they continue to stand under the chuppah, so that constitutes nisim. What if they stand under the chuppah and they want that to be the nisuin? Then they take away the chuppah, and then the chasm gives the ring and it says harayat. And they're no longer under the chuppah after the erisin. Would that be acceptable or not? Can you have Nisuin preceding Erisin? So this is a Shaila in the Mishnah Melech quotes. Quotes on Mishnah say yes, and others are not so sure about that. Now, on the assumption, right. Some poskim say that Badekin is the Nisuin, right. So that's only on the assumption that you can have Nisuin done before Erisin. And after you'll do the harayat, if you give the ring, then the nisun will take effect.
About the second luchah. The first luchah he broke, he didn't give the kesef kiddushin.
Right. So he never delivered. So the second luchah was the kesef kiddushin. So what followed the second luchah is if you should assume like the one normally assumes, not the way some, not the way Mishlei Melech quotes some paskin. Can even have nisun preceding erisin. So what constituted the nisun? So the Midrashim say that the nisun consisted of the fact that when the Mishkan was built, Bnei Yisrael walked into the Mishkan. The Mishkan is Beis Hashem. So when Bnei Yisrael entered into the Mishkan, that was Knisa L'Rishusai. You can't say Knisa L'Rishusai, the whole world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the fact that we're in His world, that's the Knisa L'Rishusai. We were there from before also. It's always no change. So nothing new happened. But when the Mishkan was built, that's what the Midrashim say. When the Mishkan was built, and Bnei Yisrael entered into the Mishkan, so that constituted the Knisa L'Rishusai Baal. So, Rabbeinu Shalom, if the kiddushin, the yerusin was created by giving over the luchos, and the nisuin was created by entering into the mishkan after the mishkan was built, that's called beis hashem, that's beis habal. And then when the Bnei Yisrael entered into the mishkan, that was knisa l'rishus habal. So, what in the world was the maimon haSinai all about? It didn't have any halachic role in the marriage. So the answer is that was the engagement. That's what we call today in modern Hebrew erison, but in biblical Hebrew that's not erison. But you see that there is a concept of getting engaged before you give the ring. That's why the Gemara says that Rav Mangid, Aman the Mekadesh, Belo Shiduche. The Gemara says that it's not proper just to give the girl a ring and say Harayat just like that. The Gemara says first you have to get engaged. It doesn't say what the engagement has to consist of. It doesn't say in the Gemara you have to break a dish, and it doesn't say you have to write Tanoim. It doesn't say what, but you have to first get engaged to make it official. That you're making a hachana that you're going to get married. And then you get, so the marriage ceremony really should have three stages. First you have what the Gemara will call shiduchim, the getting engaged, and then you have the second stage is the erisin, and then the final stage is the nisun. So that's parallel to the three stages that we have in the Chumash. First was the Maimon HaSinai, was just the announcement that we're going to have a relationship and we're going to get married. And then the actual marriage, so to speak, was created by delivering the luchas, that was the kesef kiddushin. And when the Mishkan was built, and Bnei Yisrael entered into the Mishkan, that was the Knisa L'Rishus, and that was the Nisun. We have many minhagim that we observe by weddings, and in the Sefer Tashbeit, there's a small Sefer Tashbeit, Kotel, there's a big Tshuvas Tashbeit that's by much later, one of the Achronim. But one of the Talmidim of the Maharam, Rutenberg, wrote a small Sefer Tashbeit, Kotel, where he records various dinim and minhagim, a thin little Sefer. So he records that all of the minhagim of the wedding that we have, that the minig is that you march down with candles, and that you have music playing, this is all parallel to Matan Torah. That since the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael was one of a chosan and a kal, and by Maimon HaSinai there was music playing, there was kolos, and there was fire, there was broken. So therefore the minig by us is that we imitate them. I mean, HaSinai by our weddings as well. So it's interesting. They understood that the kolos of Rachman HaSinai were because it was a wedding, not because it was going to be a dramatic event of Matan Torah. No, the mitzvah of Matan Torah, Baruch Hashem, could have just given the Shia. The drama was not for the Torah, and the drama was not for the Yiddish Shechina. The drama was because it was a chasana, and that's why whenever we have a chasana, so we should also have that. So that's why in later Svarim they point out that the proper thing is that when a couple gets married that the chosen should say some Direi Torah, because at Maimon HaSinai there was also Torah. So you see that whenever there's a chasana, it's not exactly, maybe there was a chasana and there was also a Nesina HaTorah. So they say no, the Nesina HaTorah was part of the chasana. So whenever you have a chasana, so the proper practice is that the chosen should say some Direi Torah. There's a Sefer of Minhagim from Rav Nachman Breslaver where he is quoted as saying that because Moshe Rabbeinu smashed the lucha, so that's why the minig is that the people hack up the chasen in the middle of the Torah. That the hafsoke, the being mafsik, the chasen in the middle, is zecha l'shvirus halucha. It's very unclear what exactly is that all about. I remember I once asked Rabbi Gifter what pshat is in this notion. So he says he's not familiar. Right away he said he's not familiar at all with Rav Nachman Breslav is Mahalach HaMachshava. Something occurs to him on the spur of the moment. He doesn't know. You have to check it out to see if it fits into the Breslaver system of thinking. So he said that when a couple gets married, so if they're zeicha, so then it's nasis leiz. If they're not zeicha, it's nasis kinegda. Sometimes it's going to work out, sometimes not. And Bnei Yisrael apparently weren't zeicha, so that's why they were shvirus aluchos. And if they would have been Zoichas, so then the first Luchas wouldn't have been broken. So he suggested that maybe Rav Nachman Breslover is driving at is that when Mapsik the Chassid in the middle of his pilpul by the Chassid's Tish to demonstrate to him that he better behave, he and the Kala better behave in their marriage. Otherwise, if they won't be Zoichas, so the marriage will be broken just like the Luchas were broken. He doesn't know if that's what the Kavanah is.
God
said, hey, instead, but he said because he wanted the Hashishin or the Fluya Shishin, so he wanted. But what was Moshe? A Shlich Kabbalah or a Shlich Lalacha? That's what Rav Soloveitchik pointed out. You see that by the Luchas Rishonis, it was a Shlich Lahoy Lacha. Until he would deliver the Luchas, what did he break it? I mean, he should have just put it down and not delivered it. Okay. Okay, that's a good question.
No, but you didn't have to break it, you could put it down.
No, that's a machlokes hatanaim. Some tanaim say, like he suggests, that he dropped the luchas, that he didn't really smash it. That it became so heavy that he dropped it. And others say, no, that he smashed it. That he didn't just drop it. It's interesting, the Rashi and Chumash quotes from the Gemara, in Masechah Shabbos and from the Medrash, that originally HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu who's going to appear to the Bnei Yisrael on the third day, and Moshe Rabbeinu Hosef Yamechad Midaitai, and he told Bnei Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu will appear on the fourth day. And the Gemara says that the Shekhinah was maskim al yodai v'haraya. How do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed that the Shekhinah didn't show up for the Maamin HaSinai until the fourth day? The Rabbeinu Shalom could have ignored what Moshe Rabbeinu said, and he could have appeared on the third day as he had originally planned. And he was maskim al yodai Moshe Rabbeinu. And the whole occurrence, the whole event of Maamin HaSinai occurred when Moshe Rabbeinu requested that it should be one extra day. What was the idea of adding on another day? So the Mefarshim and the Chumash point out that whenever you're interested in creating some type of Kedusha, so the more Hachona that you have in advance, so the deeper the Kedusha will be and the more meaningful the Kedusha will be. We live in a life of chol, and we run into shul to dam mincha, we run into shul to dam shachris. So you run in just like this without hachana, so the kedusha is very shvach. The more hachana there is in advance, so the greater and the deeper the kedusha will be. Rav Soloveitchik always used to quote the historian Bav Metzi and Daf Pehem Beis in connection with this. The Gemara tells us a strange story. There was a dispute between two talmidim of Rav Yudah Anasi, which one was doing more for Harbotos HaTorah in Klal Yisrael. So one time Rav Chanina Bar Chomer said to Rav Chiya, we usually assume that Rav Chiya was the most outstanding student of Rav Yudah Anasi. So Rav Chanina Bar Chomer had a dispute with Rav Chiya. He said that I'm much greater than you. If the Torah were to be forgotten, I have such a sharp mind, I could be machzor the whole Torah b'pulpuli. Even if I only have 10 dinim, I could reconstruct from those 10 dinim all the rest of the dinim of the Torah, because everything is interrelated, and I'd be able to fill in the missing gaps and figure out what laws of the Torah had been forgotten. Rav Chiya wasn't such a sharp thinker, so he said, I do much greater work for Klal Yisrael, for Habatas HaTorah, than you do. I see to it that the Torah will never be forgotten. What do you need your theoretical ability that you have? If the whole Torah would have been forgotten, you would be able to see to it that you can reconstruct. I'm seeing to it that nothing should be forgotten. So he explains how he teaches. So he says, I would do, he doesn't say that he does like this, he says, I would do like this. He says, I would plant flax. And after the flax grows, I would make nets. And I would take the nets and catch wild deer. I would shech the deer and give the meat to poor aniyim, to poor people, or to orphans, or to almonesti, who need the food. Then I would remove the skin from the deer and convert it into parchment in order to write on it. And then I would write the Chamishu Chumshe Torah Bereshis on one cloth, in Shmos, a different sefer, and Vayikra, Mamid, but Dvarim, five different swarms. And I get together, he says, 11 children. I go to different towns and get together 11 children. I'll teach one child Bereshis, and one child Shmos, and one child Vayikra, and so on. And then I'll teach one child Zeroyim, and one child Moed, and one child Nezikin, each one of the Storm of the Mishnais. And after each child knows his lessons well, I'll tell the 11 children that they should teach each other everything that everybody knows, and I'm going to come back to Faher them to give them an exam in another couple of months. Then he'll go to another town and do the same stunt there, teach 11 children and so on. And then when he comes back, he'll see that everybody will know everything, that the one who knew Bereshis taught it to the others, one who knew Shmos taught it to the others, one who knew Zeroyim taught it to the others, and everybody will know everything. And he'll see to it that everybody knows everything and the Torah will not be forgotten. So Yudah Nasi commented, yes, Kama Gedoyle Maisechiyah, the Rav Chiya is right, that he's really accomplishing more for Habartas HaTayre than Rav Chanina Bar Chome B'Pilpuloi, that his method of starting to educate the children at a young age is much preferred to the Pilpul method of Rav Chanina. So the name of the Vilna Gaon, they quote in connection with that Gemara, why did Rav Chanina do such a, why does he say he would do such a strange thing? Going to plant flax and make nets and catch the deer, and then he's going to skin them and give away to tzedakah the flesh. Then he's going to write to say, let him go to a store and buy parchment. You have to have the parchment in the ubad l'shma, so go to the store and buy leather, buy hides, and then he'll convert it. It has to be geshocht, and it can be nevelos also. It doesn't have to be such a whole story to plant the flax and to catch the deer. So the Vilna Gaon commented on the Gemara. You see from this Gemara that whenever you want to create some minyan of Kedusha, you have to have a lot of hachanas. And the more hachanas you do, the shmo, the shem of Kedusha, so the deeper and the more meaningful the Kedusha will be. So that's exactly the kavanah of Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who said, Hey, you nechayim l'shloshes yomim, al tikshu alisho, I will give the Kabbalah Sator, will be the great event of Mamin HaSinai, will take place in 3 days. In other words, on the third day, Moshe Rabbeinu, Hoisef yamechad midaito, and he felt Bnei Yisrael need an extra day of Hachanah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was maskim al yodai, that he sized up the situation properly, and the Taka did need an extra day of Hachanah. It's based on this Gemara, based on this principle that the Gemara has in various places, that when you write a Sefer Torah, the cloth has to be Mu'ubad L'shma. You have to prepare the parchment, convert it into parchment, take the leather and convert it into parchment, L'shem Kedusha Sefer Torah. And the tefillin is like that, and the mezuzah like that. Every davar shebekedusha has to have hachana in advance. You can't just take a piece of parchment and start writing. And the more hachanas that were done in advance, lishma, so the more meaningful the kedusha will be. When you actually do mitzvahs, when you learn Torah and you do mitzvahs, then the Gemara says the lishma is not that it's preferable, of course, that the person should do mitzvahs lishma, that he should learn the Shema, that he shouldn't learn in order to be gain honor and glory, and he shouldn't do mitzvahs in order that people should be mechabed him. That's preferable, but if a person learns Shalom the Shema, if a person does mitzvah Shalom the Shema, so that's also acceptable. The Gemara says, Li'olam, Yasakara Matar Mitzvah, Afi L'Shalom the Shema, Shemitah Shalom the Shema, Bo L'Shema, that's okay. But when you're speaking of setting up a situation or creating Kedusha to set up the system, then the Gemara stresses that it has to be set up with Kavanas L'Shmo. If the setting up of the system is Shalom L'Shmo, then the whole thing is going to collapse. That's the story that the Talmud Yerushalmi tells. There was one of the Tanoim who became an Apikurus, Elisha ben Avuya. So the Gemara in the second paragraph of Chagiga discusses what happened to this Elisha ben Avuya. Why did he become an Apikurus? So they don't know. Nobody knows whatever happened to him. He was such a super genius. What exactly affected him? So different stories the Gemara says. The Gemara says one story that he saw a child who went to fulfill Kibud Aviyem and Shiluach HaKan to send away Shalech to Shalach HaSavim V'Sabonim Tikach Loch. And the Torah promises in connection with these two mitzvahs, Kibud Aviyem and Shiluach HaKan, the Torah promises Arichas Yomim, and then the child was killed soon afterwards. So he decided that the whole Torah must be a fraud. It cannot be that he fulfilled the two mitzvahs that the Torah promises Arichas Yomim, and he died. Another version is that his mother was pregnant on Yom Kippur. The Gemara has another version of the story. His mother was pregnant on Yom Kippur, and she had a desire to eat some food. When they told her that today's Yom Kippur, so she said she still has a desire to eat food. And the Gemara says when a pregnant woman has a desire to eat food, even on Yom Kippur you have to give her the food, even if it's treif, because she may be mapal of lot. So because she didn't hold herself back, even though she heard it was Yom Kippur, so that's why the child later on grew up to be an apikurus. One suggestion the Gemara has. Then the Gemara says another suggestion, he read Goyish philosophy books. When he used to be in the Beis Medrash, he always be in the Beis Medrash, he used to have the Apikurus books in his pocket. And then Tosfos quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi, a totally different version. Nobody knows exactly what happened. Remember years ago, Rav Soloveitchik used to give Yortzeit drushes about Elisha ben Avuya. That was, it always intrigued him. How come this great Tana, who was also obviously a philosopher, he was reading Goyish philosophy books, how come he became an Apikurus? The others didn't read philosophy. They all read philosophy. How come they didn't become an Apikurus? The moment he became an Apikurus? So he used to talk about this a lot. In the Chelek HaDrush, he used to give 2 hours Halach and 2 hours Drush. So for a few years in a row, he gave a series of drushes about Elisha ben Avuya. What happened to him? So the Gemara gives different stories. They're not sure exactly what happened. So Tosfos quotes the following version from the Yerushalmi, that in his bris, his father Rabuya made a big party in Yerushalayim and he invited all the Tanoim, all the rabbis who happened to live there. So the Tanoim were sitting around and talking and learning, and a fire came down in heaven, just like at the time of Kabbalah Satorah. There was a fire that came down from heaven. It was a fire that didn't burn anything. It was like the snare, like the burning bush. It was a fire that illuminated and it didn't consume anything. It didn't burn the bush. So the fire that came in Har Sinai also didn't burn anything. So when they were talking and learning, the people were dancing in one room. It says the Balabatim were dancing by the Briz, dancing and singing in one room, and the Rabbanim were sitting and learning in the other room. So the father of the baby, Abuya, came into the Rabbanim. He saw this fire, so he thought that they're going to burn his rug. They're going to burn the furniture. So he said, "Well, you make a fire in my house? What are you, crazy? You're going to burn down the house?" So they said, "No, don't get excited. Don't get nervous. When we learn the base matters, there's always a fire. This is the fire from Har Sinai. This is the fire that comes down from heaven whenever we say Torah Lamitoi. So whenever it's Dvarim Smechim Kinesin, Asim Misinai, whenever it's Torah Lamitoi, so the fire always comes down from heaven." So the Avuya, the father of the baby, was looking, and he saw that the fire is not burning anything up. So he was so taken by this idea that you can talk and learning and the fire comes down from heaven, like at Har Sinai. So he swore at that time that he's going to raise his son to become a big Talmid Chacham, and he should also be able to do that stunt. My son should also be able to bring down the fire from heaven. So the Yerushalmi says that because his intention in educating his child was Shalor Lishmo, that's why he turned out to be an apikoros. So it's very strange. If the guy himself is interesting, it's paradoxical. If the guy himself would sit and learn Shalor Lishmo, I want to learn in order that I should be able to bring down fire from heaven. Even if he wants to learn to gain honor and glory and money and covet and whatever, not so terrible. In fact, Abchaim Volozhin says, you should always learn Shalom Lishma, because it's very hard. You're going to tell a person, wait until you have the right Kavan Lishma, and then begin to learn. So he never learned. That's his attack against the Hasidim. And the Nefesh HaChaim, the Hasidim always used to wait when it came time to daven, it came time to prava seder, when it came time to do a mitzvah, so they would start waiting to make sure that they would work themselves up into the right kavanah, so they would wait. And a lot of times they would wait, so they would begin the seder after chatzos, they'd begin to daven mincha, after shkia, begin to daven krishma, to say krishma, after so is my krishma, so they would fulfill the mitzvah after this man. So Abchaim Volozhin has a whole attack, and he says, if you say kriyashma after this man, and you have Prabhupada to say there after Chatzos, it's like blowing shofar on Sukkot and sitting in Sukkot on Rosh Hashanah and reading the Megillah on Chanukah and benching Chanukah licht on Purim. So it's gone shver. If you miss this man by 1 minute, if you missed the train, so you missed it. It's no good. You have to do the mitzvahs in this man. What's going to be? You have to be Ma'ir de Kavanis. So he says, Nish gefelach. And it says in the Gemara that we always encourage people, Yoylom, Yasa Kadamatar Mitzvah Shalom Lishma, should always start to do it Shalom Lishma. If you're going to wait till you're going to have the Kavanah Lishma, so you may never get to do the mitzvah. So forget about the lishma. Always do it shalom lishma. So it's paradoxical. You see from this passage in the Rishalmi that the Tosfos in Chagiga quotes that if the person himself learns shalom lishma, the person does mitzvah shalom lishma, that's not that terrible. It's not a disaster, and the world isn't going to come to an end. But if the father sends his child to the yeshiva with pasul kavanas, with pasul intentions, the system is set up like that. You found the yeshiva, or you found the shul. This fellow wants to be the president of the shul, and they never want to make him the president. So he's going to found a new shul, and he's going to be the president of that new shul. Or they never honor him in the yeshiva. He wants to be the guest of honor in the yeshiva. They never honor him. So he's going to make his own yeshiva, and he'll become the guest of honor, or something like that. So if a person wants to set up a new, he wants to create a davar shebekedusha, when you're actually doing the mitzvah itself, the liman ha-Torah, the shmiras ha-mitzvahs, even shalom lishma is also good. It's preferable that it should be done lishma, religiously motivated. But even if the mitzvah is done, shalom lishma is also acceptable. But if the setting up of the system is done, the hachanas, to create the davar shebekedusha, are done shalom lishma, so that's the worst thing of all. It's important to have hachanas to deepen the kedusha that comes later. And those hachanas for the davar shebekedusha have to be lishma.
The Rebbe's father, the Rebbe, is about makri in the yeshiva. And the person who's blowing was a chassid. So the story goes that he was ready to make a bracha, and the chassid touched his house on head and the shofar and took it at the time. So he said, Rabbi, he said, what's with the pesach? You left the matzah like this, and I like the shofar and blew it. So then they didn't get into school.
Mm-hmm.
Machlekes, we paskin hazman alav milsehi. Right. Machlekes habay v'rav. We paskin that. That's a different machlekes. Whether when I do a hachone, does it already? Is it already endowed with the Chal Hashem that it's going to get later already now? So we pass now. It doesn't get the Chal Hashem till later. If you only do Hazmana, right. We pass in Hazmana Lamos. At the time of Maimon HaSinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaimed the Aseres HaDibros. What exactly do the Aseres HaDibros represent? There were 613 mitzvahs. The manashtan of these 10 from the others, I remember they were Balabatim, and my father Shul used to come just on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And all year long we never saw them. There were others who came Shalosh Regolim, and all year long you never saw them. So I remember some of those who would only come Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Shalosh Regolim, so some of them, remember, would always, every year they would have this whole discussion. What do you mean 613 minutes? But there were only 10 minutes. What do you mean? There were only 10, no? Aseres HaDibros, only 10 minutes. So it's Taka right. What is the significance of the Aseres HaDibros? Aren't the Taryag mitzvahs, the 613 mitzvahs? What are the Aseres HaDibros supposed to represent? So that's a major dispute between Rashi and the Ramban in their commentaries on Chumash. Rashi on Parshas Mishpatim quotes from Rabbeinu Sadia Goen a statement that the Aseres HaDibros are the framework of all of the Taryag mitzvahs. These are the 10 basic categories, and all of the Taryag mitzvahs can be classified under these 10 headings. And in fact, on Shavuos there was a minig in many communities in Europe for centuries and centuries that in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah on Shavuos morning there would be mafsik to say Akdamas. Many communities, they still say now Akdamas in the middle of the laning. Most of the communities, they change the minig and they say before Kriyas HaTorah. But in many communities, they still, Ara Yamazah, they still say Akdamas after the first pasuk. And then also in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah, years ago, this I don't think is practiced anymore, in the days of the Bali HaTosis, in the days of the Goyim, they would recite Piyutim, which had a list of all of the Taryag Mitzvahs broken down according to the Aseres HaDibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and then they would recite all of the mitzvahs that are based on Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And then they would say, Le'il Achalim Achem Alpanai, and mention, lists off, rattle off all of the mitzvahs that are classified under that heading. So this is based on Rashi and Chumash in the name of Rabbeinu Sadia Goen, the Shitas HaGaonim, that the Aseres HaDibros are the basic framework, the basic 10 categories of all of the mitzvahs. Gayer, you have to be modia him, you have to tell him a little bit about what he's getting himself into. Modia mosa miktsas mitzvahs kalos, or miktsas mitzvahs chamuras. You have to tell him a little bit the easy dinim and some of the more difficult dinim. So the Gemara says you have to tell him about Avod Yisrael and Shabbos and Chumin and Leket Shikchum Pei and Stoka, different things, hard things, easy things. You have to show him that Judaism is an all-encompassing religion. So the Rambana Chumash writes, that's all the Aseres HaDibros is all about. That's such a major thing that is the framework of all of the Taryag mitzvahs, not necessarily. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was being Modiyah, the Bnei Yisrael, Miktsas Mitzvahs Kalos, and Miktsas Mitzvahs Chamuras. So he said, well, Avod Zarah, that's a major mitzvah. Then he said, Loisirtzach, Loisinach, these are major mitzvahs. Then he said, some of the others are not so major, some of the others are minor mitzvahs, but it's not that these are the 10 basic headings. This was just a sampling, a random sampling of various mitzvahs in the Torah, some being easier than others, and some being more difficult than others. That's how the Ramban understands. When Bnei Yisrael accepted the Torah, so the acceptance obligated them to fulfill all of the mitzvahs, even though they hadn't heard everything yet. They were just told mikvas mitzvahs kalos, or mikvas mitzvahs chamuras, like any convert comes. So the Beis Halevi in his Sefer HaChumash is bothered with a question. If the convert, or let's say Bnei Yisrael, in the time of Kabbalah Satorah, they accepted thinking, well, you have Leket, Shikha, Peyat, Dokah, Shabbos, Kashrut, some of the Zohar, not so hard. Then later on, they start hearing about all these details. Then they have Charata. If I would have known there are going to be so many mitzvahs, such Pratim and Pratim, I wouldn't have accepted in the first place. So shouldn't we say that Asmachta Lo Kanya? The Rambam has a Psak in Perakir Aleph and Hilchas Mechira, that if a person obligates himself to support someone else, let's say a person marries a woman who has children from a previous marriage, and he obligates himself to support the children until they get married. He doesn't know how long they're going to take till they're going to get married. He doesn't know how much it's going to cost. He doesn't know how many clothes they're going to need, how much food are they going to need. So the Rambam says that you have a problem over here. Hamischai ba'atzma b'schum shein or katzav. The person obligates himself, and he's not sure exactly what he's getting himself into. If a person obligates himself $100,000, he obligates, he knows $100,000 is a lot of money, that's it. He obligates $25, he knows what he's getting himself into. He obligates himself an indeterminate amount of money. Shouldn't I say that there's a lack of das? I should say that asmachta lo kain. So that's the Rambam's opinion, that whenever anyone is mischayv himself to a schum, mamon, shein, or kotsu, this constitutes an asmachta. There's a lack of das. He was soimich bedaita. He was relying on the assumption that it probably won't be too bad. It probably won't turn out to be too difficult. But then, the ger, the convert who accepts Torah and mitzvahs based on the assumption that it's not going to be too hard, then after a couple of days or a couple of weeks or a couple of years, he sees that this is way much more difficult than he ever dreamt. So many mitzvahs, so many details. So shouldn't he be able to tie later on that it was all a mekach toitz, that he agreed in error? So we don't say that. We say that even though a person obligates himself to a schum sheinu kotzav as asmach, that's a lack of das, by geiris it is chal. How come? So the Beis Halevi explains that the nature of the obligation of Bnei Yisrael to fulfill the mitzvah satorah is different from the nature of non-Jews to fulfill their mitzvahs. Not only because they only have seven mitzvahs, Bnei Noach, seven mitzvahs, and we have many more. We have 613 mitzvahs. Even the seven mitzvahs are different. A nochri, a non-Jew who is obligated to fulfill mitzvahs, has an obligation. He has a duty to keep these mitzvahs. Bnei Yisrael have to do mitzvahs because we have given ourselves over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as avodim. Avodahen, Asher Tzeis Yosem Eretz Mitzrayim. The pasuk says in the end of the Teichach, we are avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Beis HaLevi explains if a person, and even with respect to the Sheva mitzvahs, not only that there are more mitzvahs, the Sheva mitzvahs that we don't do as one is obligated with a relationship to another one to deliver the goods, but to give services or to fulfill mitzvahs on behalf of the other party. We are kenuyim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we're obligated to do whatever He wants us, because we belong to Him, we have given ourselves over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Beis HaLevi explains, what would be the din if a person sells himself as a slave to somebody else? A Jew sells himself as an Eved Ivri, or a non-Jew sells himself as an Eved Kenayni to an owner, to a master. And later on, in the course of the years that he serves the other person, the Odon, the master, asks him to do this job, that job, and the other job. He doesn't know in advance what the Odon is going to ask of him to do. So shouldn't we consider any situation of a person selling himself as an Eved Ivri or as an Eved Kenani? Shouldn't we say that that's also the equivalent of an Asmachta, an Asmachta Lo Kanya? We should say also, he never knew what he's going to get himself into. If he would have known, maybe he wouldn't have agreed. So can he tie in now that his sale of himself as an Eved was a Mekach Tos? So we never say that. We don't say that that's a Mekach Tos. Why? Because he wasn't obligating himself to specific things. He's giving himself over as an Eved. And that's the halacha, that if I am an Eved to someone else, he has a right to ask of me whatever he wants. And I understand what it means. I become an Eved. When I become an Eved to the other person, I belong to him. And Memela, I'm his property, so Memela, I'm obligated to do everything. So that's why it's not a taina. How can a ger, how can a convert be meshubit, be obligated to fulfill all of the mitzvah satir if he wasn't aware of what he's getting himself into in advance? We only told him a sampling of the various mitzvahs. We were only madia, mitzvahs, mitzvahs kalos, or mitzvahs, mitzvahs chamuras, gival, but he didn't know what he's getting himself into. The answer is it doesn't matter that he didn't know. He's makna himself over to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an Eved, and Memele, once he's an Eved, so he belongs to Hashem. We are kenuyim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Memele, you have to do all of the work. So the Beis HaLevi claims that in his way of thinking, this is the reason why there's a major difference between the extent to which the Bnei Noach are obligated to fulfill the mitzvahs, as opposed to the extent that Bnei Yisrael are obligated to fulfill the mitzvahs. We sometimes have it in of Yehorig Valyavar, that we are sometimes so obligated, such a serious obligation, to observe certain laws, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Domim, or whenever it's an issue of an Aveira B'Farhesia, or B'Shas Hashmad. So we have various occasions when we say that the obligation to fulfill the laws of the Torah so severe, so stern, you even have to give up your life. And the Gemara raises the question in Masechah Sanhedrin, Adaf Ayin Daled, whether non-Jews have this similar obligation regarding, let's say, Avodah Zarah is a law that applies to non-Jews. Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Domim, do they also have such an obligation? That they're forbidden to violate Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos, even to the extent of their being required to lose their own lives in order not to violate the Aveir. So the Rambam understands that the maskana of the discussion, it's a little unclear what the final conclusion is in the Gemara. It's a dispute between the Rambam and Tosfos. So the Rambam understands, that's why it's usually assumed, like the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchas Yisrael says that only Kol B'nei Yisrael Mitzuvim Al Kiddush Hashem. Only the Jewish people have the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, and in the Achrim, the Umas Olam, never have such an obligation. They're obligated to keep the Sheva mitzvah, they're obligated not to worship Avodah Zarah, not to violate the Gilui Arayos, but not to the extent of losing their lives. Whenever their life is in conflict with this din, so then you say that Pikuach Nefesh is Deicha the Aveira of Avodah Zarah, or the Aveira of Gilui Arayos. So why is Ataka such a major difference between the Bnei Yisrael and the Umas Olam? So the Beis Halevi explains that's exactly why. The Umas Olam have an obligation to keep the mitzvahs, but it's like I make a deal with another person, we make an agreement, we sign a contract, so I'm obligated to live up to my half of the deal, and you'll be obligated to live up to your half of the deal. I cannot obligate myself to give up my life. How can you obligate yourself to give up your life if I won't be alive? So it's not shaykh to obligate yourself to that. An obligation means that kol zman that I'm alive and kicking and I'm in my right mind, so I have to do or not do whatever the deal was, whatever the agreement was, whatever the contract calls for. By Bnei Yisrael, it's not just that we obligated, not merely we obligated ourselves to fulfill mitzvahs, we have given ourselves over. We gave up our lives to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Avodim. And as His Avodim, so we have to, we belong to Him. We are not Balabatim on ourselves, Bechal. So whatever He says, we're obligated to fulfill because we belong to Him. So the Mele of HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes asks of us that He wants us to give up our life, so it doesn't belong to us. Our life doesn't belong to us anymore. By the Umas Olam, their obligation is not because they belong to Hashem. They are not Avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are not Tnuim to God. They are themselves, and the Shekhinah is the Shekhinah. And there's a deal between the two. They have an obligation to keep their half of the deal, to keep the Sheva Mitzvahs, and the Shekhinah is going to reward them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to reward them for living up to their half of the contract. But you can't say that they are a Kenuyim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why it's not shaykh to say that they have an obligation, even to the extent they have an obligation to fulfill the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, even to the extent of losing their lives. That doesn't make any sense. That's not part. They can't be part of an obligation. How can a person have an obligation to give up his life? But by Bnei Yisrael, it's not an obligation mechlal. We gave our lives over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Kibbonim have the same thing. Kibbonim. What's the din by Ben?
Bonim is a different thing. Bonim is why you're shaykh to have tshuva, no. But our obligation to keep mitzvahs is b'toras avodim. The obligation to keep a mitzvah, and a bain is not obligated to keep mitzvahs. An eved is obligated to keep mitzvahs. The Gemara in the end of Maseches Makos comments on the pasuk Torah Tziva Lana Moshe Marosha Kehilas Yaakov that the word Torah is a gematria Tov Vav Reish Hey is the gematria of 611, and there are 613 mitzvahs some total, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaimed the Aseres Adibus at HaSinai, the first two he recited himself. The Loshen he's speaking Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hatzisicha Mi'eretz Mitzrayim. The other mitzvahs after the Lo Yilach Aleihem Achem Al Ponai, the Shekhinah is speaking. The other Dibros are not written Beloshen Nochach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking. It's written Beloshen Nistar, that you should observe the laws of Shabbos as Hashem created the world. Doesn't say because you should remember that I created the world. It says you should remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took you out of Egypt. You should remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. You should remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded you. The rest of the Dibros of the Aseres Adibros are written in such a way that Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to Bnei Yisrael about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. But the first two, Anochi and Lo Yilecho, are written in such a fashion that it's Mipi Agvura Shemayna. So the Gemara says that the first two are two, and the remaining mitzvahs of the Torah are Tof Reish Yud Aleph of 611. That adds up to the sum total of 613. Many of the Meforshim have written Sforim, the Rambam and the Ramban, and the Sefer HaChinuch, and the Smag, and the Smak, many Rishonim, and Achrayim have written Svarim in order to try to determine, to try to figure out what exactly are these 613 mitzvahs. There are different opinions, because really there are millions of mitzvahs. How can you say there are only 613? So you have to have some kind of rules and regulations, some kind of klolim, in order to determine which mitzvahs we are going to count, and which mitzvahs we are not going to count. So the Rambam has in the Sefer HaMitzvahs two parts to the Sefer. The first half of the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he lists off 14 klolim, 14 principles which he thinks should guide us to determine which mitzvahs to include in the minyan taryag and which not. And then the second half of the Sefer, after he's already established his 14 kololim, he tries to determine which are the 248 mitzvahs asay, and which are the shasa, shin samachay, the 365 mitzvahs loises. So it's interesting, the Rambam, in enumerating his, he has an arichas on each one of the sharoshim, the yud dalet sharoshim, he enumerates in his Hakdomah to the Sefer HaMitzvah, he gives you the kids of what they are, and then he gives you a barichas, each one of them. So it's interesting, the first of his Sharoshim is that he's only going to count among the Taryag mitzvahs, those mitzvahs that are min HaTorah. He's not going to count mitzvahs that are min HaRabbanan, because the Gemara uses the expression Shesh Meres Shlosh Esa Mitzvahs Nemud Ola Moshe Nisina. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu HaSinai 613 mitzvahs. Two of them the Shekhinah said themselves, and the other 611 Moshe Rabbeinu said. The Shekhinah didn't speak directly to us. The Shekhinah Medaberes Mitoch Ruach Shel Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu said it in his language, not Beloshon Noichach, but rather Beloshon Nistah. Not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking, but rather that Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rambam says that it's clear that we're not supposed to count mitzvahs in the Rabbanon and the Minyan mitzvahs. And then the Rambam says the reason why there's no, the reason why it doesn't make any sense to include mitzvahs in the Rabbanon, like Hadlokas Neiros Kanitin, Mikra Megillah, reciting of Halal on Yom Tovim, which is only in the Rabbanon, the Rambam says the reason why it doesn't make any sense to include these mitzvahs in the Rabbanon in the Minyan mitzvahs and the number of Taryag mitzvahs is because the Chumash tells us that we have to listen to the Chachamim, whatever they pass, and we have to listen. And that's one of, that is already one of the Taryag Mitzvahs. So if the Chachamim tell us that they want us to bench Chanukah Licht, and they want us to recite Halal on Yom Tovim, and they want us to read Mikra Megillah, to wash Tulas Yadayim, so that's a mitzvah of the Rabbanon, that's already a mitzvah in the Torah. It says you have to listen to whatever the Chachamim say. Lo Sasser, it says in the Torah, whenever the Chachamim tell you something, you have to listen to them. So all the mitzvahs of the Rabbanon cannot be counted as separate mitzvahs. They all fall under this one big mitzvah of listening to whatever the Chachamim tell us. The Ramban disagrees with the Rambam and he says that doesn't make any sense. You mean to tell me that all mitzvahs for the Rabbanon are biblically obligatory? It's Yechayv min HaTorah. That doesn't make any sense. The Gemara always draws a distinction between a din that's min HaTorah and a din that's min the Rabbanon. The Gemara says a sofik deraisa lechumre. And the Safik Derabbanon is Lekula. And the Gemara has many, many differences between Dinim Derais and Dinim Derabbanon. According to the Rambam, everything that's a Dinim Derabbanon becomes automatically a Dinim Derabbanon based on the Pasuk Loisosur. The Ramban says it doesn't make any sense. The Pasuk in the Chumash that says Loisosur means a different thing. If you have a Shaila, how to interpret the Chumash? It says in the Chumash, Adin Abasa B'chol. It says in the Chumash, Adin of Ribis. It says in the Chumash, Adin of Malacha and Shabbos, Malacha and Yontif. And it's so unclear, nobody knows what it's referring to. So if you can't figure out what it is, so you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, whatever the Talmud Chacham paskins, you have to follow. Whatever the Rav, whatever the Bezdin paskins, you have to listen to. But that only means you're obligated to listen to the Rabbanim when they tell you what the Din HaTorah is. But if they get up one fine day and they say the Din HaTorah is that there's no Chanukah, there's no Purim, but we want to invent Yesh Mayan, we want to invent a new Yom Tov that you should celebrate Chanukah and celebrate Purim, and you should recite Halal on the Yom Tovim. So that's an invention with the Rabbanah. It's not that they're interpreting Pshat and the Chumash, what the nature of Ribis is, and what the nature of Moloch is, and what the nature of Asuk is, and how do you know if the Lulav is Kosher. They're inventing a new din with the Rabbanah. So the Ramban says, that's not included in Laisasa. In the Chumash it says, Ki Yipalimim Chadovel HaMishpat, when you don't know what Pshat and the Pasuk is, you should ask a Shaila, and when they give you the Psak, you have to follow. But it doesn't refer to inventing new din with the Rabbanah. So that's the dispute, the famous dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam says that you cannot include mitzvahs midrabbanon in the listing of the Taryag mitzvahs because all mitzvahs midrabbanon are biblically ordained. The Torah says you have to listen to whatever the Chachamim say, in meaning both whether they paskin what a din derais is or if they invent a new din midrabbanon. And the Ramban says that that's not correct. It's really a dispute. The Ramban quote is really a dispute in the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos in the second paragraph. Madlik and Samachleikis Samaroy. So the Rambam follows the one opinion and the Ramban follows the other opinion. The Ramban insists that the obligation to keep mitzvahs midrabbanon is only midrabbanon. It's not a biblical obligation. It's very strange. What does the Rambam mean to say? The Rambam really holds that it's a biblical obligation. Taka doesn't make any sense. How can you say that the chiyuv to fulfill a mitzvah midrabbanon is minatara? So the words don't make sense, but it's only a mitzvah midrabbanon. More said before, it's only a mitzvah midrabbanon. On the other hand, what does the Ramban mean to say that a mitzvah with the Rabbanon is not minatara? It's only with the Rabbanon. So on the level of the Raisa, it's Ibud Zman, but the Ganesh Gitan, he wasted his time. So also doesn't make any sense. So Rav Soloveitchik used to say that he thinks that they both agree to almost everything except for one point. What's the difference, halacha l'maaseh, between the Rambam and the Ramban? Well, they're just using words over here, that with the mitzvah is minatara, with the mitzvah is with the Rabbanon, you're obligated to fulfill minatara or midrabbanon. What does that mean? What do the words mean? What's the difference halacha l'maaseh? You have a chakira when you have a shaila, whether the nature of the din is A or B. If you don't have enough kamina, so the chakira is nishken chakira. So what's enough kamina in the whole fight over here? Whether mitzvahs midrabbanon or minatara midrabbanon, no difference. Everybody agrees to all the dinim in the Gemara. So the commentary is on the side of the Megillas Esther. There's a commentary on the side of the Sefer Mitzvahs here. It was written by one of the Rabbanim from the Middle Ages, whose mother passed away right before, his mother's name is Esther. His mother passed away right before he was about to print the Sefer. So to honor his mother, he named this Megillah. Megillah means a book. So he named the Sefer Megillas Esther, the book of Esther. It has nothing to do with Megillas Esther. Just it was named after his mother, that's all. It's interesting, in the back of the in the back of this edition of the Sefer Mitzvahs, they have another book called Maisa Nisim. It's a book written, it's the letters, the correspondence back and forth between our Rav from Baghdad, Rav Daniel HaBavli, and the Rambam son, Rav Ben Avram Ben HaRambam. So someone published this, and it's called Maisa Nisim. So remember Rav Soloveitchik used to, years ago, he doesn't understand. So very interesting. This Rav Daniel HaBavli had a lot of kashas on the Rambam and the Sefer Mitzvahs, and the Rambam's son always defends his father and explains what his father's position was. So he has letters back and forth. He sent them back. So the Rav used to say years ago, he doesn't understand, why do they call it Maisa Nisim? He never noticed any Nisim in the floors over here. Everything is just straight halacha. No Nisim, what's the Nisim? So on the first page they tell you why it's called Maisa Nisim. That there was a Sfardi by the name of Nisim, who was a wealthy man who put up the money to print the book. When they found the manuscript, it was printed in Paris in the year Tav Resh Chav Zayin. And it says who put up the money, Nisim Shamara Kayad Zatzal. And they named the book Maisa Nisim, like he named the book Megillah Esther, because his mother passed away. That's the pshat. He writes in the introduction, his mother died, so he called it Megillah Esther. So the Megillah Esther points out the only difference between the Rambam and the Ramban in this issue is with respect to the din of Zokin Mamre. There is a din in the Chumash that if the Bez Nagodl paskins on a certain issue, even if you're convinced that they made a mistake, you're not allowed to paskin against them in public. Even if you're bigger than them, even if the local Orthodox rabbi knows how to learn better than Bez Nagodl, he's not permitted to paskin in public against them. If he holds that they're wrong, let's say they tell you have to bench standing on your head. And he knows, he heard from his rabbi, you have to bench sitting down on the chair. You're not supposed to bench standing on your head. So he has to, he's not allowed to bench in public. He's not allowed to bench in public sitting down. Because when a Talmud Chacham does something in public, so that's the equivalent of a psak. He's not permitted to paskin against them. He can say in public, the Bez Nagodl says this is the din, and I think that they're wrong. But he's not allowed to say that you shouldn't listen to them, you should listen to me. He's not allowed to say that. Not allowed to paskin if I can. When he gives a shir, he can explain why he disagrees with them. But he's not allowed to paskin, he's not allowed to do in public. So what does he do when he benches? He should bench in private, so it won't be taken as a psak. And he should do the way he knows it. You're not supposed to bench standing on your head. You're supposed to bench sitting down on a chair. And if he does paskin in public against the Bez Nagodl, they say you have to use an orange for an esrig. And he says, that's not an esrig. I know what an esrig is. They don't know what in the world they're talking about. So even though they're really wrong, they were absent that day. The Rebbe taught about esrig. So they thought that an esrig is... he marked their b'chinas. So he knows that they only passed their smicha with a 65 or something. And he knows better than them. He knows that an esrig is an esrig, and they don't know. So he said, even though he knows beforehand that they made a mistake, he's forbidden to paskin against the Bez Nagodl. So in private, he has to shake his lulav in his real esrig in his own house that the people shouldn't sit. He's not allowed to paskin again. So what's the din if the Bez Nagodl paskins on a din derabbanan? They paskin, I don't know, they paskin, the Rambam has this case, they paskin about chometz on erev Pesach before Chatzos, which is only a din derabbanan. They paskin one way, and he says they're absolutely wrong, that's not the way the din derabbanan was instituted, the din derabbanan is different. So would there be a din of Zokin Mamre if he paskins against them on a din derabbanan? So the Rambam says yes, and the Ramban says no. So the Megillas Esther points out, and that's what Rav Soloveitchik used to say over, that that's the only difference halacha l'maaseh between the Rambam and the Ramban. Because all the other halachas remain the same. Sveika deraisa l'chumrin, sveika derabbanan l'kula, all the other differences we know. However you're going to slice it, the Rambam and the Ramban agree to everything. The only point where they disagree is this one point. The Rambam claims that all of the dinim the Rabbanon are included in the pasuk of Leisosur Mikol Adova Shiagid L'Choyom Nesmol V'Hoisha Shiasa V'Zodim L'Vil Tishmor L'Akoyin Ha'imit Shom Nesharis. It says whoever doesn't listen to the Bez Nagodl from paskins against them is Chayiv Misa because of the dinim Zokin Mamre. So the Rambam paskins like this opinion in the Gemara, like this Amora, that all dinim the Rabbanon are governed by this din of Leisosur. And there is a din of Zokin Mamre. And the Ramban disagrees and he says, no, that Loisosur only means to say that when you have a Shaila, what's Pshat in the Chumash, then you have to listen to what the Rabbanim say. But if the Rabbanim tell you we're going to invent a new din with the Rabbanim, they're not giving a Pshat in the Chumash. To invent a new din with the Rabbanim, that's not included in Loisosur. So the Ramban holds that once it's not included in the din of Loisosur, you can continue to say, V'hisha Shiasa V'zodim V'dul T'shmael HaKoyin Ha'im Sham L'Sharis, that is Chayiv Misa Mitam Zokin Mamre. The onish misa of the Zokin Mamre only applies if you violated the din of Leisosur. the whole difference halacha l'maisa between the Rambam and the Ramban. So what's the whole fight that they're talking about? So unclear, so unclear. Rav Soloveitchik said he doesn't really understand what the Ramban wants over here. Everybody knows that the following is true, that the chayvus ha-gavra to keep the mitzvahs of the Rabbanon, the obligation to do these mitzvahs is clearly only mid the Rabbanon. On the other hand, however, the fact that when the Chachamim introduce dinim de Rabbanon, it becomes part of the Torah Shebal Peh on a level of their Isa, he thinks that everybody agrees to that. The Torah Shebal Peh is an ever-expanding thing, and every generation and every day and every year the Chachamim come up with new dinim, if the dinim makes sense, so that becomes a part of the Torah Shebal Peh on a level of their Isa. And even if the Chachamim invent the din de Rabbanon, not only if they develop the dinim de Isa and go further and further, even if they invent Yesh Meyayin and Din Medirabbanan, that too becomes part of the Torah Shval Peh on the level of their eyes. And when you learn that Din Medirabbanan, you learn the laws of Netilus Yadayim, you learn the laws of Kitnias, you learn the laws of Din Medirabbanan, whatever Din Medirabbanan there are. One is fulfilling a mitzvah of Talmud Torah on the level of their eyes. And not just on a level of their eyes, it's Ibud Zman, and on a level of the Rabbanan, it's Talmud Torah. No, all the Din Medirabbanan become a part of the Torah Shval Peh on the level of their eyes. So the Chayv is HaGavra to keep these mitzvahs of the Rabbanan is only Medirabbanan. You can't say the Rambam disagrees. But a chepz of Torah, once the Chachamim institute these dinim, it becomes part of the Torah Shval Peh, that's Minat Torah. And if you fulfill the mitzvah, if you actually do the Kima mitzvah, many poskim say, everyone will agree that it has the status of the Kima mitzvah on the level of the Raisa. The only machlokes, the only one machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban is regarding Zokim Mamre. The din is that the Zokim Mamre is only Chayiv Misa if he's Moira Lassos, if he paskins Halacha L'maisa, that you shouldn't listen to the Bezna Hagov. So here, if he's going to paskin at Shiur Alasas and Adin Rabbanon, so the Ramban holds that since the Chayvus HaGavra, the obligation of the person to do this mitzvah is only with the Rabbanon, so on a level of the Raisa, he can't call that at Shiur Alasas. He can't say that he paskin on a level of the Raisa, he paskin how you should act. On a level of the Raisa, he's not mukhif to do anything here. The Chayvus HaGavra is only with the Rabbanon. And the Rambam holds no, that since Minat Torah, this Din de Rabbanon becomes part of the Torah Shebal Peh on a level of the Raisa, so it is shaykh to speak of Hairoa because Hairoa means in the area of Torah Shebal Peh. That's a question of details. That's a question which there are certain mitzvahs which the Ramban thinks the Rambam left out. So he claims that there is a mitzvah Minat Torah to conquer Eretz Yisrael, to establish a Jewish government there, and that all the Jews should live in Eretz Yisrael. He says these are two parts to the mitzvah. He says it's not enough if you live in Eretz Yisrael if it's under non-Jewish control. Or it's not enough that they have a Jewish government and we live here in America. We have two parts to the mitzvah. We have to have a Jewish government. Say the Turkish to say they want to live in Eretz Yisrael, but it should be under the Arab control. So they won't be fulfilling the mitzvah. The mitzvah is v'yirishtemosa v'yishaptemo. You should control the government. The Eretz Yisrael should be in Jewish hands. And that you should live in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam doesn't count that mitzvah. It's a question of the details. So some commentaries claim that the Rambam thinks that it's... The Rambam also has all these dinim. So some say that the Rambam thinks that the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael is only the Rabbanon. And the mitzvah to establish a government, that he counts already. That's the mitzvah. Lahamad lahamela, to establish a government is lahamad lahamela. And most of the commentaries say that it's not true, that the Rambam thinks even the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael is also a mitzvah min ha-Torah, but it's included in a different mitzvah, so the Rambam feels that he doesn't have to repeat it. But there are several details where the Rambam and the Ramban do disagree, whether it's actually a mitzvah or not. In the second Shorish, in the Shorish Hasheni of the 14 Klolim that the Rambam postulates, he says he's only going to count in the Minyan HaMitzvos those mitzvos that are written explicitly in the Torah Shebichzav. Those that are Nidrash, those that we have derived based on the Midrash HaTorah Nidrashis Behem, you have Klal HaPrat HaKlal, Ribi Yamiut, whatever drashes you, an extra hay, an extra vav, letters, whatever, however you dash into the Torah Shebal Peh, this he's not going to include in the Minyan HaMitzvos. So the Ramban says, what's the shlech the Torah Shebal Peh? What's wrong with the Torah Shebal Peh? What, does the Rambam think that all the Torah Shebal Peh is only with the Rabbanan? So obviously that's not what the Rambam thinks, because the Rambam has two different Sharoshim. The first Sharosh is that you're not counting Dinim the Rabbanan. The second Sharosh is you're not even counting all the Dinim the Raisa. It tells you which Dinim the Raisa you're not going to count, those Dinim the Raisa that are only Torah Shebal Peh. The Rambam is just saying over here in the second Sharosh that there are two distinct parts to the Torah. Dinim deraisa are divided into two different parts. There's Torah Shebichzav and there's Torah Shebal Peh. So the Rambam claims that the minyan hamitzvahs of Torah, Tziva, Vano, Moshe, the Taryag mitzvahs, the Tofresh Yud Aleph with the two of Anochi and Le'ilucho, only refer to those mitzvahs that are mefurish in the pasuk with Torah Shebichzav. He's not going to count Torah Shebal Peh. The Rambam and the Yad HaZakeh has this distinction even sharper. He will always label things as the Araisa or as Mepi Ashmu Alamdu. Mepi Ashmu Alamdu means also a din that's the Araisa, but it's not written explicitly in the Chumash. When he has a din the Rabban, he'll call it Midivrehem. But when he has a din the Araisa that's not explicit in the Torah Shebichsav, he'll write Mepi Hashmu or he'll write Midivrei Sofrim. Midivrei Sofrim means that it's Torah Shebalpeh. Where did the Rambam get this stress that you have to know what's a din that's mefurish bikra, what's Torah Shebichsav and what's Torah Shebalpeh? So the Prima Godim points out in his Hagdama. Prima Godim has an introduction to his commentary on Aruch Chaim. It's really an introduction to all of Torah Shebalpeh, and there are several commentaries that were published on the Prima Godim's Hagdama. Here in this volume, they have 5 or 6. Meforshim on the Prima Godim's Hagdama. They wrote commentaries on the Hagdama. It's very fascinating. The Hagdama itself is fascinating, and the commentaries are fascinating. They're all very fascinating. So the Prima Godim points out there is a dispute in the Gemara Gittin Daf Samach between Rabbi Yochanan and his student Rabbi Elazar, Elazar ben Hados, whether the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebichsav or the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebalpeh. A strange dispute. So he quotes from one of the Svarim. The Be'er Sheva, Amasechus Harius, he asks, isn't that ridiculous? Why don't you go look in any bookcase, look in anyone's home in a bookcase? How much room does the Tanakh take up? How much room does the Svar take up? The Mishnayis, with the Gemaras, with the Rashba, with the Minchas Chinuch, with the Rambam, with the Shulchan Aruch, it's a million times more than the whole Tanakh. The whole Tanakh, with all the Meforshim in the world, is not going to be as much as the Torah Shebalpeh. So how can there be a suffix where the Rov Torah is Bichsav, or Rov Torah is Balpeh? The Torah Shebichsav is so little. There are only 24 Sifrei HaTanakh. And then millions and billions of Sifrei of Torah Shebalpeh. How can that be a shaila? So the Be'er Sheva in his commentary on Masechus Arius claims that the Amoraim are arguing about the following point. They all know that whatever it says in Tanakh is Torah Shebichsav. They all know that whatever is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is Torah Shebalpeh. Now Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is a technical term that means it's a din that was transmitted Balpeh orally, which has no remez at all, has no makor at all in the Chumash. There's no way to derive it from the Chumash. It's only known through the Masorah, through the Torah Shebalpeh. So everybody agrees that that's Torah Shebalpeh. The dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar ben Hados and his Talmud is, what about all of the dinim that are derived, all the dinim deraisas that are derived through the Yud Gimel Midrash Torah and Rashi's Pem, which is 98% or 99.99% of the whole Torah. So are those considered? Are those dinim considered Torah Shebichsav, or are those dinim considered Torah Shebalpeh? That's the dispute. And that's what we generally assume, that the Rov Torah is Balpeh, because we assume that all of the Yud Gimel Midrash are Torah Shebalpeh. So the Rambam is just paskening on that Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rebbe Hados, where the Rov Torah is Bichsav, the Rov Torah is Balpeh. In other words, whether all of the Dinim, the Araisa, which are learned out through the Yud Gimel Midrash, Shahatran and Rashi's Bem, are they labeled as Torah Shebichsav, or are they labeled as Torah Shebalpeh? So the Rambam says they're labeled as Torah Shebalpeh. And therefore we cannot include them in the Minyan HaMitzvahs of the Taryat. What's the difference, though? That's what the Be'er Sheva asked. What's the difference whether you label the Torah Shebichsav or Torah Shebalpeh? Am I nafkamina? So that's what the Prima Godim has a whole essay about on the very first page in his Hagdama to his Torah Shebalpeh, to his introduction. You see, he lists off the various nafkaminas. So among other things, he quotes the famous passage of the Rosh in Bava Kamma and Daf Yud Zayin. Gemara has a shaila in Bava Kamma regarding the din of Tzruros. There is a din that if your animal happens to wander into my backyard and it tramples on the fruits or the vegetables and it causes damage, so the Torah says that you have to pay. That's called Shem Veregel B'Shus HaNizik. If your behemoth comes and nibbles on the food in my backyard or it tramples on it, so that's Shem Veregel, so you have to pay Nezik Shom. What happens if your behemoth is rambling, walking in my backyard and it kicks a pebble and the pebble flies and it smashes a window? So that's called Tzruros. The animal kicked the pebble, so the din is that Tzruros is not Behema Shehizika Begufa, it's called Behema Shehizika Bekoach. It's slightly indirect, so you only have to pay Chatzi Nezik. You only have to pay half of the damages. The window is worth $100, you have to pay $50. So the Gemara wants to know what is the nature. The Gemara says that that's a halacha l'moshe misinai. Hilchos HaGemirah. So the Gemara wants to know what is the nature of this halacha l'moshe misinai. Should we assume that in principle the din should have been that kocho kigufo? What's the din, let's say, in Adam HaMazik? I throw a rock against someone else's window and the window gets smashed. Do I have to pay or not? So we say, of course you have to pay. But the Gemara first raises the question. Maybe the only time you pay is if you took the rock and you smashed it against the window directly. But if he threw the rock from a distance and it's only kocho, maybe the din is that you potter. Should you say kocho is kegufo or kocho is lab kegufo? So the Gemara says, well, how would you understand tzururis? If you hold in principle that kocho is kegufo, then not a mamazik who smashes something like the kocho really should pay nezik sholem, then tzururis is halacha moshe mesinai lahokil, that we give him a break and he only pays chatzin nezik. If you hold that the principle really should be that kocho lab kegufo, then not a mamazik who smashes the window by throwing a rock is really potter, because kocho is not called adam amazik, then tzuris is halacha moshe mesinai l'chumre. So the Gemara asks, well, which is it? Is it halacha l'kulo or halacha l'chumre? Is it the same principle kocho kegufo or kocho lav kegufo? So the Gemara says, Rabbi asks the question, and after thinking about it for a while, he came to the realization that kocho is kegufo and the halacha moshe mesinai is l'kulo. And the Gemara doesn't explain what the proof is. Usually the Gemara will say, Basa de baya hada pashta. After the Amora was thinking about the Shaila, he was poshited, and he brings a raya. What led him to believe that that side is more correct? Here the Gemara just says, he thought about it, and he came to the conclusion that this is it, and it doesn't say why. What led him to believe that kocha is kegufo, and tzuris is lahakel? So the Rosh has a famous comment there, that all halachas in Rosh Mishinai are lakuma. The whole Torah Shabbat Peh is lakuma. The Torah, that's how the Chassidish Svarim has. The Torah Shabbat is given the midas hadin. Maybe you have anything written down, it's going to be, by its very nature, it's going to be rigid and strict and restrictive and confining and so on. You have the letter of the law, right? Ayin tachasayin. It sounds from the Chumash as if ayin tachasayin. And then the Torah Shabbat Peh says, no, that's not exactly what it means. It doesn't really mean ayin tachasayin. What it means is momen. And the Torah Shabbat Peh is always makel. Whenever you have, and the Rosh gives you a proof that based on the psukim alone, it would appear that when you make a sukkah, you have to have three full walls. And the Torah Shabbat Peh says, no, it's enough if you have shtayim kilchosom, ushlish is afilu tefach. So he says that for that Gemara, in the beginning of Sukkah, we can demonstrate this postulated rule that all halachas l'moshe m'sinai, whenever you have a Torah Shabbat Peh, it always comes l'hokel, because the Torah Shabbat Peh was given b'midas ha-chesed, whereas the Torah Shabbat was given b'midas ha-din, Torah Shabbat Peh was b'midas ha-chesed. So the Rambam is just quoting, is just assuming like these Gemaras, that the Torah Shabbat Peh is not really the pirush of the Torah Shabbat. It's not that the two blend in together. The Gemara says in several different places, the Gemara will use an expression commenting on a pasuk in Chumash, Toro Soi. It says that we have to observe Chuko Soi, Mishpotai, Visoro Soi. So what does it mean, Toro Soi? So the simple meaning is Toro Soi, my teachings. Laharos means to teach. More as a teacher. So we have to listen to the teachings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara will comment, Toro Soi, Shtei Toros, the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebalpeh. So you see from the Gemara that it's not that the Torah Shebalpeh is the Pirush of the Torah Shebichtav and they blend in together. They don't blend in together. The Torah Shebichtav is one Torah. And the Torah Shabbat Peh sometimes contradicts it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that we should follow the Torah Shabbat Peh as opposed to the Torah Shabbat Chesed. They don't blend in together. The one was given the Midas HaDin, the one was given the Midas HaChesed. So that's what the Rambam says, that Rabbi Yochanan had a dispute with Rabbi Elazar there in Gittin Daf Samach, whether the Dinim, the Araisa, which are learned out through the Yud Gimel Midos, they are latched onto Psukim in the Chumash, but they're not explicit in the Chumash. They're not the same as Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai, where there's not even any Mokav at all in the Chumash, but they're based on drushes from the Psukim in the Chumash. Should we assume that all the dinam deraisa that are based on Psukim in the Chumash, the Yud Gimel Midas, are deraisa, Torah Shebichsav, or are they deraisa, Torah Shabbat Peh? Do they fall under the category of Halacha Moshe Mesinai at the Torah Shabbat Peh? So the Rambam says that we follow Rabbi Yochanan, that all of that, this is 99% of the Halacha, are all the dinam that are derived through the Yud Gimel Midas. So he says that this really belongs to Torah Shabbat Peh. And as such, it's a different Torah. It's not that they blend in together to be one. It's really a different Torah. And the Taryag Mitzvahs that we count are only those that were never done on Moshe Mesinai in the Torah Shebichsav. We're not counting the Torah Shabbat Peh. That's a different Torah. It's a completely different Torah. That's the second Midah that the Rambam has. The second Shorish. The third Shorish is a major one. The Rambam says that you only count the Mitzvahs that are Noheg L'Doros. A Mitzvah that's only Noheg L'Shoa is a Dvar Nevuah. By its very nature, it's not called a mitzvah. Rashi comments in the very beginning of Parshas Tzav, a loshen tzav or a loshen ziru is miyad uladoros. That a mitzvah, the technical term mitzvah, can only apply if it's an obligation that's of an everlasting nature, that it applies throughout all the generations. So that Rambam is a basic law. Sometimes it's unclear, like the last pasuk in Parshas Bamidbar. This week said was a question. It says v'lo yavol iris kivalas hakodesh v'meisum. You're not permitted to watch when the Leviim put all of the Klei HaMishkan into the special bags that they used to transport them in the days of the Midbar. So So most of the Moni HaMitzvah do not count that as one of the Taryag Mitzvahs, on the assumption that that was only a Hayruah Shor, that it only applied during the 40 years of the traveling in the desert when they had the Mishkan. It doesn't apply L'Doros. And the Farshim asked that it's not true that the Gemara says in Yuma and Daftan Beis that that's a Din L'Doros, that it does apply L'Doros. That the Gemara tells the story that the during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Oram was in the basement, and one kain once saw one of the stones on the floor of the Beis HaMikdash was loose, and he climbed down the staircase, picked up the trapdoor, climbed down the staircase, and he looked at the Aron, and he died. And the Gemara says, why did he die? Because he violated that din, that you're not permitted to look at the Kalim under punishment of Misa B'dei Shamayim. So the Gemara asks, but in the period of the Bais Rishon, when the Aron was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, when the Jews would come to the Ola Regal on Pesach Shavuot Sukkot, they would roll up the curtain of the Paroicha so that everybody could look at the Aron. So you see that it's a mitzvah to look at the Aron. So how can you say that this fellow was Nenash? So the Gemara says, no, that pasuk, V'lo Yavol Liris Kivalas HaKadosh V'Mesu, is only when the Aron is Shalubim Komo. When the Aron is Bim Komo, it's okay. Then there's no Issa. When the Aron is sitting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's fine. That's Beheta. When the Aron is in the basement, or when the Aron is in a state of transportation, when they're moving, then the Issa applies. So the simple reading of the Gemara is that this is really a Din L'Doros. That's why the fellow died during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, when he looked at the Aron, when it was Shalom and Kom. So this is a problem. The Ramban has discussions of this throughout the Sefer HaMitzvah regarding certain psukim in the Chumash, whether they really represent mitzvahs L'Doros, or they're only mitzvahs that were of a temporary nature and should not be counted. He has a suffer regarding remembering the Chet HaEgel. Is that a mitzvah L'Doros once a year, every year, to read the Parshas Chet HaEgel, or is it only Hayruah Shor? That the Dor HaMidbar, those who were involved in the Chet HaEgel, should remember several other mitzvahs is mesupik, whether the dinim l'shor or dinim l'doros. It's g'day to look through the rest. The Rambam has a lot here. The 14 Sharoshim of the Rambam with the discussions, they're very interesting. What they represent, why he considers these 14 Sharoshim so basic. Okay. I want to wish everybody a guten yontif and a pleasant summer. I won't be able to continue saying
Shiur and after the congregation that